This is Around the Rim with LaChyna Robinson.
Hello, basketball fans, and welcome to a brand spanking new episode of your ESPNW Women's Basketball Podcast, Around the Rim. I'm your host, LaChyna Robinson, joined as always by my fantastic and fabulous producer, Tarika Foster Brasby. Now, you won't hear her melodious voice on this episode because she left me to do the intro by myself. That's how Tarika is. I mean, come on. But it's fine because now I'm going to force her to do a little short podcast with me later this week where we will dive into some hot topics around the WNBA, and I will touch on them a little bit in just a moment. But our guest for today is none other than the Big East commissioner, Val Ackerman. And if, you know, hey, you're a women's basketball fan, you know that name. Val was the first president, I call commissioner, of the WNBA, which also made her the first woman ever to successfully launch and operate a women's team sports league. She was also the first female president of USA Basketball. This woman has held pretty much every position you could want to hold of power, of influence within sport, keeping in mind she got her start at the NBA working under David Stern, with Adam Silver. I mean, she's brilliant. That's about all I can say. Went to UVA. Shout out to the ACC. Val's going to talk to us about a number of things. I just asked her to put on her commissioner hat and tell us what some of these commissioners might be thinking about as we have started the launching of sports back into our everyday lives here in the United States. Women's soccer is already playing, some other things going on, but most notably, the NBA and WNBA for our podcast listeners are set to start the end of July. So what are they thinking about? Val is going to give us some insight. She's also going to talk a little bit about what's going on with the Big East, NIL, name, image, and likeness, and how that may shift and change what we see happening in college athletics if it pops off this fall. We don't even really know what's going to happen with college athletics, but Val will talk about all of that. Now, just a couple of things on my clipboard to note. Number one, we still don't know a lot about what is to come for this WNBA season. Yes, we've been told the season's going to kick off on July 24th. That we know of, that's still going to happen, but we don't have a schedule. We don't have final rosters. We don't have final rosters because we are anticipating some medical exemptions. One major medical exemption announcement this weekend, Liz Cambage, according to Howard Megdal of The Next, I believe her agent also released a statement. So Liz is not playing. We don't really know what this medical exemption process looks like for WNBA players. We know that the WNBA has created space and opportunity for players that have pre-existing conditions to still make their full salary. But how that goes about being determined, all those things, we don't know. We also know that the WNBA released a statement that said 137 players were tested. Seven came back positive for the coronavirus, including two from the Indiana Fever, who is going to delay their trip to Bradenton, Florida, a few days to allow for some of the close contact rules the CDC has talked about to try to take effect. Oh yeah, and by the way, most teams are traveling to Florida on commercial flights, which I will address when me and Tarika have this podcast a little bit later in the week, because I do have some concerns. Now, what else do we know? Not a ton. Keep your eyes and ears to the ground on the WNBA, because we're expecting to learn a lot more about how things will happen in Bradenton as coronavirus rates there are through the roof. So obviously a major concern, something that Kathy Engelberg, commissioner of the WNBA, told us that she would be keeping an eye on. A lot to come. Also, announcement today that I believe was first reported by Erica Ayala, who, if you remember her, she was a guest on Around the Rim podcast. Erica, I hope I'm saying your last name right, because it feels like I was supposed to roll something that may not have happened. But Erica is the host of the New York Liberty podcast, but she released news that the WNBA will have a social justice council down in Bradenton that will work on some special projects and some of the initiatives that the WNBA plans to launch over the summer to use their voice to advocate for issues of social justice and speaking on social injustices. So more to come on that. A couple of just odds and ends quickly before we get to Val on women's college basketball, first and foremost. Joanne P. McCauley has stepped down, effective immediately, from her position as head coach of Duke women's basketball. And I know you're all wondering, who do I think should be coaching at Duke? Well, you're going to have to tune in to our podcast later this week on ATR, Around the Rim. And I'll give you some folks. Some may be surprising to you. You're going to probably say, maybe doesn't have enough experience. Where's this person coming from? Well, first and foremost, let me just say this. Gail Gessencourt should have been interviewed for this job. Duke is the most attractive job in women's college basketball. A lot of that has to do everything with Gail and the success she had there. Like, I am way disappointed, and I hope that Duke has something amazing in store for us in terms of what they're getting ready to do with this hire, because their alums wanted Gail. Got to listen to the people that built the program, but I am excited to see what they're going to do, and I will share my thoughts again when Tarika and I get back together later this week. Maya Moore, doing amazing work, continuing to do amazing work around criminal justice reform. Jonathan Irons is free. He was expected to serve a 50-year sentence for burglary and assault. And as you should know, Maya Moore has dedicated 2 seasons of her WNBA career to getting him free and to doing criminal justice work. Katie Barnes has a great piece on ESPN if you don't know about it, but we need Maya to get more attention. She should win every social justice, courage, advocate, hero award there is, period. Period, point blank. Last but not least, Kelly Loeffler is making headlines. That's right, the Atlanta Dream co-owner has taken an interesting stance. As you know, she has joined the political front in Georgia in the Senate, and I first saw this come from a WNBA player on Twitter, where Alicia Clark tweeted an article titled, "Why is Kelly Loeffler still a WNBA co-owner despite Donald Sterling vibes?" Now, not to say that I did not know about what Kelly had been saying and doing, but this is the first time I saw a WNBA player basically tweeting an article that I thought was really well done by a woman named Shalise Monza Young for Yahoo Sports, that outlines some thoughts and beliefs and statements and actions by Kelly Loeffler that directly contradict some of the values of the WNBA. We will get into that again once Tarika joins me later this week. But for now, please enjoy our podcast with Val Ackerman. All right, basketball fans. Well, I'll be honest with you. When I go through my cell phone and I look at the names that I'm just honored to have, right? If you got somebody's cell phone number, you kind of feel like a lucky person. And this next guest is probably in the top 3 smartest people I've met in my life that happen to also be in my cell phone. Can you believe that, Val? Do you believe that?
China, I'm glad that you're in my cell phone. I mean, that's on my line, my friend.
Fans, please join me in welcoming the Big East Commissioner, Val Ackerman, to our show. Val, we're so excited to have you. You know, as we were preparing for this podcast, and, you know, Tarika and I try to do our due diligence and our research, and I'm looking down the list, and we'll share with our listeners, you're a member of the Women's Basketball Hall of Fame. I mean, these accolades. You're the Big East Commissioner now, have been since 2013. You worked at the NBA in various capacities going back to 1988. Including in there, yes, there is a connection there, fans, with the NBA and WNBA, but you were the WNBA commissioner from 96 to 2005. You served as the president of USA Basketball as well on the board. And my favorite part of your bio is that you played at UVA, because we're both ACC girls.
Exactly. So
that I appreciate. But that long list of accomplishments, of positions, of knowledge, of expertise is exactly why we wanted to have you on the podcast to talk about a number of things. And I have to start with this. How challenging have the last 3 months been just for you overall professionally?
Well, very. First of all, great being with you, however, virtually.
Yes.
Always great to see you.
I know, right?
It's been a rough ride for sure. I know no one, I think, except the smartest scientists could have expected what we're dealing with today, a global health crisis. Every industry sector has been hit. Everybody in our country, in our world, is affected by this. And then you kind of, you know, take it down to the various industries that have felt it, and certainly the sports business is no exception. So it's been just a very difficult period of trying to keep folks focused, trying to deal with incredible uncertainty about what, in the case of college sports, the fall holds. You know, college sports got shut down in March. They weren't left with difficult decisions about resumption of play like the pro leagues are facing. But now we've got around the corner decisions to make about campuses coming back online, you know, whether it's in person or online or both, and then what that means for college sports. So dealing in that zone of uncertainty and trying to come up with a lot of different models and scenarios, and then, you know, figuring out when you have to make a decision about which model to go with, I would say it's been grueling.
Well, and Val, I know every conference is different, right? For example, you don't necessarily have to worry about the football aspect of things. And so the Big East is unique in that way. But if you had to speak for the Big East, but other conferences across the country and their commissioners, what is the greatest challenge that you all face right now?
Trying to balance, you know, the desire of people to get going, mm-hmm. and get back on the field or get back on a court in the case of basketball in some months' time, with the health concerns of the athletes, of course, most of all, but all of the participants. It's not just, you know, student athletes. In our case, they're obviously primary, but you're also in a position where you've got to look out for coaches and support staff, referees, and officials. And then it's all done in the context of these bigger questions, really, that our college presidents are facing about how their campuses can reopen, because they're not just looking out for the athletes. They've got many thousands of other students who they've got to be keeping, you know, their health and safety top of mind as well. So you're right. We don't have football that we sponsor in the Big East anymore. We do have four schools that play it. Mm-hmm. We don't sponsor it. We do have six fall sports, men's and women's soccer, volleyball, field hockey, and cross country, that we're trying to wrap our heads around in terms of the formats. And then, of course, you know, lurking in the background is what's going to happen, and I know this would be of interest to you, with the basketball season.
Yes.
This year. And that doesn't start until October with practices and then games in November. But just, again, lots of uncertainty about this. So it's really testing leaders in our business, and it's going to force some very hard decisions in the weeks and months ahead.
Yeah, I will say, Val, that I've always envied your job as the commissioner of the Big East, because the one thing I always talk about on this podcast is I'm not a football girl. And so, you know, I was like, if I'm going to be a commissioner of a conference, it would definitely be the Big East. And I know you've been basketball affiliated your entire life as well, so you can appreciate that. So as we look past the scope of college athletics and we start to think about the professional realm, and I mentioned at the top of the show how much vast experience you have in that space. You know, we watched a special on Monday, right, on ESPN with Adam Silver and Kathy Engelbert and, you know, commissioners of the MLS and Roger Goodell just talk about, you know, where they are right now as they look to return to sports. If you put your commissioner hat on of a professional league, what is going through their minds? Like, what are the biggest considerations that they are having to make and think of right now to start sport next month, even for the NBA and WNBA?
Well, again, you know, the leagues that were playing and then suspending in March are facing different decisions than we've got in college sports. So I don't envy them, for sure. I know they've all been consulting with doctors and professionals, local authorities, because all these leagues are national and they're working in different jurisdictions. And that's a factor because different states may have different stages of where they are with the reopenings, and that affects sports. So that adds to the complexity of decision-making. I would assume that the pro leagues are focused, just like we are in college sports, on the health and the safety of their athletes. They're in a somewhat different spot because their athletes are paid. And so some of the negotiations they're having are not only about the protocols, but also about the adjustments in pay, because their seasons will be adjusted. So that's an important consideration. And it seems like some leagues are in different places than others as it relates to those dealings with their unions. I will say a critical difference, you know, for the pro leagues versus the college is that they all seem to be envisioning, you know, what we kind of call now bubbles, where they would take players and they would bring them to a single location and in effect quarantine them for some period of time so that they can get games played, deliver a television product to their broadcast partners, and fulfill certain obligations that they have in that respect, all again with the, you know, assent of the players. We don't see that happening right now in college sports. I mean, we're sort of conducting sports in the context of campuses. Our athletes would be traveling to some degree. This notion that you could sort of pick them up and take them somewhere for one or two or three months, pull them out of class, and sort of try to, you know, run a sports competition system that way has not been sort of seen as an option in college sports. I don't think it will be. So I think that's an important difference here. But I guess the pro leagues are deciding that that's possible and it may be necessary, you know, to get the games played in the way they want to get them played, just so they can close out their seasons. And then it will certainly affect what they do next year. So they've got to deal with that when the time comes also.
Yeah. For the average person that, you know, doesn't have the behind the scenes experience or maybe necessarily understand all the nuances that go into the decision that a commissioner may have to make at the pro level, what if they're saying to themselves, do we really need to play during a pandemic? What do you see as just the positives or the reasonings for either the leagues or for society that are kind of seem to be pushing sports back into play?
There's no question to me that our country misses sports. I mean, we're sports obsessed, really. We play, we watch, we consume. I guess that's the business term for it. I think, you know, the pro leagues, they want to be out there. They want to be consumed, if you will. Their athletes want to play. They have important revenue streams that they're trying to cover off on. But again, you know, the challenge here is figuring out a way to do those. Those are laudable goals, but they have to be done with an eye to safety and health of the participants, you know, most of all. So I think that's really what they're wrestling with. What's, you know, what they can do safely. Is it logistically and, you know, financially possible? I think it'll be easier for them financially to pull off the kinds of protocols that you're hearing about with testing and tracing and hygienic procedures than you might see on certain college campuses where the resources are thin, especially now with other challenges financially that colleges are facing. I think that's actually a big question in college sports now, is what can be done when you look at the people and the money required to pull off some of these measures. So the pro leagues are in a different place in that respect. So I think they have some more latitude, I think, to, you know, to consider how, you know, how they can come back. Mm-hmm. But again, these are unprecedented, you know, kinds of challenges facing the leagues. Nobody's been through this. Everyone's looking to each other for guidance. Certainly globally, we're starting to see, you know, the European soccer leagues, for example, and others eager to get back, making a go of it. And we'll learn from each other there. But, you know, again, these are tough decisions that have to get made. And then they're going to continue because from everything we're hearing, we may not get a vaccine for a while. So the kind of challenges that we're all facing are likely to be with us for a while.
Yeah, to your point, the Premier League is back, one of the soccer leagues that is back and competing. I also wanted to mention earlier that you've already made the decision, unless this has changed, but I did hear previously that if there's no school, there's no sports, correct, for the Big East?
Yeah, I think that's shared. I mean, I don't, you know, that's true. We couldn't see our way clear to having no students on campus, but bringing back athletic teams. But I think it sounds more and more like schools are mostly going to reopen in some fashion.
Yeah.
And the key here is, you know, having some in-person presence. And if students are coming back and the schools feel like it's safe for that to happen, then that's, you know, then it's easier to see how athletics could fit into that as a component of that in-person student demographic.
Yeah, so much to keep our eyes on. I mean, I'm sure you've been watching all the news, even in the recent week, of the spikes that we're having, and Dr. Fauci talking about, you know, the second wave. And that's actually another question that I'd like to ask you is, you know, we hear so much about medical experts, but how do you decide what medical experts to listen to?
Well, you know, they're in high demand right now, I'll tell you that. We have a few. We have in our conference, many conferences have done the same thing, and the pro leagues I know have. We formed a medical task force. We have representation from our ADs, SWAs, doctors, trainers, equipment managers, strength and conditioning personnel, venue personnel, and we have three outside experts who are very learned in infectious diseases and global health, global public health. And so we actually had a call earlier today before I joined you, and you know, it's really daunting. I mean, I have to say what they're forecasting. There's various models out there about how the virus is going to sort of, you know, its trajectory in the U.S. and how it's going to progress in the coming months. No one knows for sure. I mean, a lot of it will depend on how each of us manages our own lives with masks and social distancing, and what, you know, states are going to be doing in terms of their reopening procedures. So it's, again, a lot of unknowns here, but we kind of went within. We have a representative from Georgetown. We have a representative from Creighton. We've got some others involved here. So it is just, you kind of, you know, work your contacts. Presidents of our schools, in some cases, put forward names. And again, these doctors are working overdrive because they not only are doing their day jobs, but they're providing a lot of guidance, which is much needed because we're not medical professionals in the sports business. We're trying to run our sports operations, but we don't have this expertise. So we need to get it.
Yeah. But I love the foresight in developing the task force. I also love that you had insurance on the Big East tournament, from what I understand, right? Like that's why you get paid the big bucks as a commissioner, but yeah. That's incredible.
I have a good staff, but we were covered, including pandemics. I mean, being in New York, you have to kind of be ready for everything there, but we were, fortunate in that respect. And, you know, we were following a government directive at the end. And so we're in good shape there. But again, it doesn't take away from the disappointment that you have. That's Big East tournament at Madison Square Garden is the biggest event we do all year. It's a great event. It's going to be even better with UConn coming back to the conference with their great fan base. And then, of course, losing March Madness was sort of the double blow this past year for men and women. As you know, was going to be a great finish in women's basketball also, and pretty wide open on the men's side. And so that's sort of separately dealt with by the NCAA. They run the national championships. So the financials that were at play there were kind of managed on their side.
Yeah.
But again, you know, all very tough things. No one, I think, would have expected to have happened what happened to have happened. And so now most we can do is just kind of look ahead to next year.
Yeah. And congratulations on welcoming UConn back. I was Gino on the horn with you like all every day, like, hey, you got a spot for us?
He put in a few calls. he was excited.
Yeah.
And not surprisingly, because I think a lot of the Big East is about its history. You know, it's a 41-year-old league with a really kind of a unique DNA, being a basketball-centric league and sort of these Northeast schools. Connecticut was a charter member. And so they were with the Big East much, you know, longer than they weren't. So to bring them back and then to have everything that they'll bring in terms of that, again, that history, the rivalries, and, of course, in men's and women's basketball, we're really, really excited. They'll add a ton.
Yeah.
Oh, July 1. That's the date.
Yeah. Well, I know he'll miss his meetups with Harry Perretta, which we will all miss Harry.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I have my thoughts about him and Doug really kind of in cahoots to make sure they can have their wine nights again during the regular season. I mean, they were playing pretty consistently, but now they're going to see more of each other, right? Including at the Big East tournament. So
yeah, that's a trouble. That's just those two together. It's great, but it's a little bit trouble there.
Yeah, it's going to make it very interesting. Yeah, things will get fun. A few more questions for you, Val. Just curious on your thoughts on how this pandemic as we narrow it down, you know, we're a women's basketball podcast. How do you feel like this pandemic could impact women's sports in particular?
I think, well, first, it's going to affect all sports, LaChina, no question. I mean, sports leagues, big and small, will suffer from this. So if you sort of accept that as your premise, then, you know, yes, I think women's sports leagues will suffer. This was sort of, you know, honestly, a little bit of a heartbreaking summer because, you know, we lost the Olympics, Summer Olympics in Tokyo, which are always a moment where women's sports increasingly have shown, you know, where we were expecting, I'm sure for Team USA, many gold medal performances, including our basketball team going for their 7th gold medal in Tokyo, unprecedented performance by a team sport, national team, you know, group. The WNBA season delayed, looks like they'll be starting. The National Women's Soccer League, Women's Pro Soccer League, coming off a lot of momentum, particularly with the World Cup last year. So they, you know, they're going to make a go of it as well. And that'll be good. I mean, that'll be good and positive that something will happen. But it's not the same, particularly if it's fan-free, because that's where women's sports is and needs to keep growing. You know, bringing the fans in, sort of showing, and you've been to so many women's basketball games where that in-arena environment can be amazing. So we're going to miss that. Hopefully women's college sports will be okay. Title IX will protect them to a large degree, which is good news there, but it's a tough, it's definitely a tough blow. And I think that, you know, I think women's sports leaders here have to accept that, but they also have to have a long view and just sort of not keep their heads down too much, keep their heads up and look to the future and use this as an opportunity to kind of think ahead and do some strategic planning about where they want to be in a couple of years' time, because that's going to be as important as where they're going to be in the next couple of months.
Yeah. You mentioned the fan aspect, which, you know, as of right now, no sporting events are allowing fans to attend. How important is that aspect as we try to get back to sports? Like, this could be, we don't even know how far out, we don't know when there's going to be a vaccine. And so, not only in the business model of sport, but just the overall importance of fan participation and how it shapes everything from tailgates to crowd environment to ticket sales. Like, where does that fit into all of this?
Well, I think it's, you know, frankly, honestly, I think it's going to be phase two. You know, that I think folks in the business are starting to get their heads around the likelihood that in-person gatherings are going to come later. That's going to be, those are the so-called mass gatherings or large gatherings that all the states are limiting right now or prohibiting outright. And so that will definitely affect that in-game experience that, you know, that coming together of the athletes and the competition and the fans, you know, make so many sports events, you know, that much better. It's not just the game, it's that interplay. So whether it's football or basketball or a sold-out NHL game, you name it, I think that part, unfortunately, is going to be, again, you know, slower to come around. The good news is if these games can be conducted safely, they can still be on television. Yeah. And so since many fans consume sports on TV anyway, thankfully they have people like you to guide them on what's going on out there on the court, that's still possible, even if you don't have fans. Now, that's going to create, I think, some innovativeness by the networks to try to make it look as good as it can be made to look, given that we don't have fans in the building. Yeah. And I know a lot of networks are really hard at work there on how to manage the video and how to manage the audio and how to do the cutaways and how to do, you know, certain things that sort of minimize a bit the fact that it may be in front of technically an empty house. So, but again, the TV could be pulled off. But I think, again, for the sports leagues, the starting point is, can you do this safely at all? Mm-hmm. And then if the answer to that is yes, I think you can introduce TV. And then, you know, again, I think the hardest part is going to be to bring that fan piece back. That may be the last thing to come in.
Yeah. Just a couple more topics that I want to get your quick thoughts on. One, we have not discussed yet on our podcast, so you are kind of breaking news in a sense. But we haven't had a discussion about name, image, and likeness. Just quickly, you know, I was listening to you speak on a Big East during a Big East press conference back, I think, in May. And it seems like there are going to be so many layers of this that are going to change the way we conduct ourselves in college athletics. I also heard a lot about the members of the Big East that are have been a part of these different committees and task force, which I'm sure will help you a lot to implement what you need to implement from a conference standpoint. But what are the most significant adjustments, in your opinion, to this now name, image, and likeness thing that looks like it's going to happen?
Well, it is on track to happen. I co-chaired a national working group that looked at the rules. Right now, they don't allow for athletes to monetize their names and their images and likenesses, known as NIL, is the shorthand for that. But we made a recommendation after nearly a year of study that those rules should change. We presented a report to the NCAA's Board of Governors back at the end of April. That represents all three divisions, presidents from all three divisions, that the rules should change and be done in a way that we think needs to happen consistent with how college sports are conducted. So the important points of this are that these monies would come from third parties. The schools wouldn't be paying additionally. These would be third-party income opportunities that more and more students, regular students, have, particularly in social media. Mm-hmm. The presidents of NCAA schools, don't want to see salaries paid to students as if they were employees. So the model we came up with would keep it from being that. Mm-hmm. Schools would be mostly kept out of the arrangements. So it would really be the athletes themselves with the help of advisors, taking advantage of opportunities that may be coming their way, whether it's in endorsement deals or to support businesses they've started or books they've written or songs they've composed, modeling. They could conduct lessons for a fee in their sport. There's a whole host of activities that would be envisioned here that are frankly groundbreaking in college sports. So from that standpoint, LaChana, I think it'll be a real positive for all athletes, not just the high profile ones. There could be opportunities here for women's athletes, Olympic sport athletes. That would be tremendous and certainly a step forward for them. But there are a lot of details that have to get worked out, particularly how these opportunities would unfold in the context of recruiting, which only college sports does, and how boosters, would be involved or not involved and so on. And whether third parties should be involved in kind of running some elements of this. So there's still work to be done. Other groups within the NCAA are now working on details. And I expect a vote in January and then implementation in the fall of 21. Okay. So this is a big deal. I mean, frankly, but for coronavirus, I think it, the news we made when we came up with this framework would have caught more attention. But it is a big deal, has a capacity, I think, to really help student athletes. And the last piece of it is we recommended that Congress, if possible, get involved to make sure there's one uniform rule, because a lot of states now are looking to create their own state laws about this, and they're different from one another. So that, we think, creates potentially a little bit of a chaotic operating environment. So if Congress can get involved and preempt the states and get us back to one rule, that would be ideal. So that's all happening on a parallel track, more to be done. But I think it's a pretty big development in college athletics.
Yeah. Wow. You've been a part of so many groundbreaking moments, because this is a huge development. And it just interesting to me to even hear you say that you were in support of this, but also helped to come up with a framework for it. And I know there's so much for us to still learn, but it definitely has always felt like the right thing for me. I was that college student that, went to a school where my next door neighbor in my dorm had a BMW, and I was still trying to figure out how I was going to buy deodorant, right? And so as small of that this may seem to some who say, all right, if you are LaChina Robinson, who was not as great of a basketball player as Val Ackerman, like, how can you really capitalize on this? But even if it means I can post an Instagram post or have a camp and make $100, that makes a big difference, or would have made a big difference for me.
Yeah, understood. You got that backwards on the, who was better than whom. But I will say, yeah, absolutely. I mean, that was very much part of the thinking, is to try to equalize those opportunities and make it a little bit easier for the athletes. So, yeah, a lot to be done, but it should be very exciting when it happens.
Well, before we let you go, Val, I just want to get your thoughts, again, with your commissioner hat. there's so much happening right now in our country around trying to deal with the issue of racism and the social injustice that exists. What is it that you foresee the Big East doing in response to just this problem that's plaguing our country right now?
Well, we, long before the events of the last couple of weeks, and I'm with you, it's horrific to see some of the imagery. We had put together an internal diversity, equity, and inclusion working group within our conference. And that group's been hard at work for the last almost 2 years, trying to think out ways that our schools can educate our student athletes and others, can conduct awareness programs, and then importantly, step up our hiring practices so we can get more women and more people of color at the tables, mm-hmm. Leadership tables within our conference. So that work was already underway, and then these events happened, and so we've now basically redoubled our efforts. We're working on what I think will be a comprehensive conference action plan that will combine promotion, student athlete education and programming, an award. We're looking to create partnership with an outside group to provide programming, including in voting and civic engagement, potential alliances with HBCU institutions. Many of our schools, and particularly in men's basketball, play HBCU schools during the basketball season. So we're thinking about how we can maybe build on that. Working closely with the NCAA and other conferences to try to just bring some scale mm-hmm. to these efforts. I mean, to your point, I mean, we're a college sports conference. I think there's limits on what, you know, we can do as an individual organization. We'll try to do our part. But I think there clearly has to be a collective effort here to really get the change that we all want so badly. And so in the college world, we're very diffused, as you know. We've got 32 conferences, 350 schools in D1. I think we will be looking to, our leaders within the NCAA to come together on this. I've got a commissioner meeting next week where this is a really important topic. And so I think, LaChina, you'll start to see some more concrete plans coming out of the statements as people really absorb what happened and really think hard about what can be done, what strategies can we use to kind of get at the kinds of things that made this possible. So we're committed to do our part. I don't have anything I can sort of share with you more specifically than that today, but I can tell you on behalf of the conference, we're very committed.
Well, I mean, I just first commend you on even having something in place before what we've seen erupt in the last month, because you're right, this has been a problem that has existed long before. And so I find those institutions that have some framework in place as far as diversity and inclusion can now just extend those efforts, which it sounds like a lot of what you'll be doing. But I think about what I've observed in these last few weeks from student athletes. And you and I talk about social media all the time because I'm always trying to get you on Twitter. I'm like, Val, you're too smart. We need you on Twitter. We need your thoughts out there.
I'm still working on it. I'm still thinking about it.
Right. Like I told you I could be your ghost tweeter. But as I'm looking at the student athletes, I mean, like never before, they're calling for action from their athletic departments, from their institutions. And, you know, I believe it was Steve Kerr that just said, hey, this generation is very different in terms of their knowledge, their love of diversity. And it sounds like, you know, that age group of, I guess it would be Gen Z, maybe of the 17 to 22 year olds, you know, in the college space, don't quote me on that, I get my gens mixed up, but have been very outspoken in what they're looking for from their athletics departments and coaches. And that's been an interesting development.
Yeah, I think you're spot on there. And I may have mentioned this, but we are looking to, every conference, as you know, and every school has a student athlete advisory council. Mm-hmm. Known as a SAC. And so every conference has representatives from each school SAC on its conference SAC. So we are working through through our students in that way. And I think you're right. I think we're seeing a level of activism from the athletes themselves that's unprecedented. And hopefully we'll have an impact. I mean, that's, you know, I think it's got to be translated into legislative action. I think the election this fall will be critically important. Part of our efforts are going to be to get the vote out, mm-hmm. make sure athletes exercise their civic responsibility in terms of voting. But I think it feels different from other events, horrific events that we've had in the last 25 years, and hopefully it will lead to some change, and folks have to just keep the pressure on.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Val, or Commissioner Ackerman, I should be technically calling you, I feel like.
Val to you. It's always Val to you. Don't ever forget that.
We're just so grateful for your time. I mean, your expertise, your knowledge. I even heard that law degree working a little bit there when it comes to contracts and different things. But thank you so much for visiting Around the Rim. You don't know how much it means to us, to our platform, to have you. And, you know, your value to our sport in women's basketball, WNBA, college, grassroots, is just immeasurable. And so we just want to stay connected to you and to learn from you, and hopefully to continue to have conversations like this so we can enhance and grow our game, but also for the greater good of sport. So thank you so much.
Thank you. And thanks to you for everything you do. You're doing a lot, and it's really appreciated. So keep on pushing, my friend.
Thank you.
No, we need you telling our story. So keep telling it the way you tell it.
I appreciate that.
Go with you.
You too. Go Big East. Right. Thanks, Val.
Thank you for listening to Around the Rim. Check out more podcasts from ESPN on the ESPN app.